I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome back to Radio Times. More than a decade ago, a joint congressional committee investigated the September 11th terror attacks and released a report, 28 pages of which are being held in a secret vault. They allegedly contain information about the involvement of Saudi officials who were helping the hijackers. Our guest, former Florida Senator Bob Graham, who co-chaired the committee, wrote in the Washington Post recently, "Should we believe that the 19 hijackers, 15 of them Saudi, most of whom spoke little English and had never visited the United States, acted alone? Did the hijackers have foreign support? If so, who provided it?" He's been calling for the release of those 28 pages for many years now. The Obama administration is reviewing whether or not to release them and said that they would decide soon. Bob Graham is a former three-term U.S. senator and governor of Florida, again, chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee and co-chair of this 2002 joint congressional investigation into the September 11th attacks. He's currently chair of the board of overseers of the Bob Graham Center for Public Service at the University of Florida. Senator Graham, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good. Marty, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. You've been calling for this for years. In fact, I think I had you on the show maybe a decade ago calling for the same thing, the release of these 28 pages. Why is this so important to you?
I think it's important to the country. It's important to the country because of justice. There are the families of the almost 3,000 victims of 9/11 who have been attempting to get compensation for their losses by suing Saudi Arabia as a co-collaborator in the 9/11 tragedy. They have been unable to meet the evidentiary standards and the standard of defense against sovereign immunity to get their case heard. Having the information that I think will come out not only of the 28 pages, but of the thousands of other pages of documents that have been withheld from the 9/11 investigation, they'll be able to meet that standard, have their day in court. Second, it's a matter of national security. The Saudis know what they did. The Saudis know that at least at the highest levels, we know what they did, and yet there has been no response. I think they have interpreted that failure to respond as a signal of impunity. And thus, they have continued over the intervening now almost 15 years to fund terrorist organizations, continue to fund al-Qaeda and its regional subsidiaries and ISIS, and maybe even more important, operate mosque and madrasas, schools, in which jihad is taught, and thus supplying a constant group of new recruits for terrorist organizations. Those are the consequences of our failure to tell the American people and the world the truth about Saudi Arabia's involvement in 9/11.
Well, you were the co-chair of this joint congressional investigation. I'm assuming you know what's in those 28 pages.
It's been 15 years, but you don't forget information as searing as I think people will find the 28 pages. And again, I underscore the fact that the 28 pages are the tip of the iceberg. As an example, there was a newly discovered case, newly in 2011, of collaboration between Mohammed Atta, two of his henchmen, and a prominent Saudi family living in Sarasota, Florida. That family, after 6 years living in their home, fled under what was described as urgent conditions, e.g. new cars in the front lawn, clothes still in the closet, food on the table, back to Saudi Arabia 2 weeks before 9/11, creating the inference that they may have been tipped off as to what was about to happen. The FBI initially said they had no documents about that situation. When a federal judge pressed them, they produced 80,000 pages of documents, which he has for more than a year been reviewing. That's just an example,
right,
of the degree to which we are still ignorant as to the full details of what happened on 9/11.
And I'm going to pick up on that with Shane Harris, will be joining us in just a couple of minutes. But why do you think two administrations, we're talking about the Bush administration and the Obama administration, have been reluctant to release these 28 pages?
That's another one of the unanswered questions. I could speculate that it includes the fact that we've had a long relationship going back to World War II in which we agreed to provide security to the Saudis. They agreed to provide us with a consistent, reliable source of petroleum. There also was the close family relationship between the Bushes and the House of Saud. There's the issue of the instability in the Middle East and what would it mean if Saudi Arabia were disclosed to have had significant involvement in 9/11. And I think there's a degree of agencies which did not bring glory to themselves during the pre-9/11 and the post-9/11 period, wishing to hide their mistakes, or better said, bury their mistakes.
Well, let me quote something that the CIA director, John Brennan, said just a couple of weeks ago. He was on Meet the Press. This is about these 28 pages. He said, "I think some people may seize upon that uncorroborated, unvetted information that was in there that was basically just a collation of this information that came out of FBI files and point to Saudi involvement, which I think would be very, very inaccurate." He's saying that people might misunderstand the kind of information that's in these 28 pages. What do you say in response to the CIA director?
Well, I think that's an affront to the American people, that they cannot be trusted with the truth. I don't think that Director Brennan's definition of what's in the 28 pages is fully accurate. And I believe that rather than arguing over what is in a document that's been hidden for 13 years, let the American people see it in the full light of day, and they're smart enough to make a judgment as to what it means, and they and their representatives in Congress and elsewhere are smart enough to figure out what this will mean in terms of U.S. policy.
But does it tell us, those 28 pages, that there was some kind of involvement by the Saudi government, the Saudi royal family, underlings in the government? What can you tell us?
I cannot tell you the details of what it says because I'm still under an oath of respect for the confidentiality of these documents as long as they continue to be hidden from view. But I believe the American people will find them to be of considerable interest and may cause a reassessment of our policy in the Middle East.
Well, I understand you have to be very careful about what you say, but just reading in between the lines there, it sounds like this could be very explosive material.
Well, it as the tip of the iceberg, and then all of the big block of information below it, which in many cases reaffirms in greater detail what the 28 pages say, I think it is explosive.
Let me quote something from the 9/11 Commission, and some members of the commission have disagreed with you. And one of the findings from their report was, and I'm quoting here, "We found no evidence that the Saudi government as an institution or senior Saudi officials individually funded the organization." That's a solo sentence there. Senator Graham, how do you interpret that?
Well, first, that's a very closely written sentence. It doesn't indicate that lower officials within the Saudi government might not have been involved, or financial institutions, charities, foundations, religious groups which have an affinity with the government were not involved. Again, rather than debate what very few people have had a chance to read, my position, and frankly the position of at least half, if not more, of the Citizens 9/11 Commission, people like former Secretary of the Navy John Layman and former Ambassador to India Tim have said that it should be released.
There's something that you have said, and this is about the FBI, and I'm looking at something that was actually in the Daily Beast. Cover-up is a fairly passive action. You describe what the FBI is doing by withholding this information as aggressive deception. Is that another way of saying that they're lying to the American people?
Well, I'd like to stay with the aggressive deception, which
what does that
I define
mean?
As meaning that they were... They have been presenting a narrative to the American people publicly, which is at variance with information that is in their own files. I've already cited one example where they first told a federal judge they had no records as to an investigation in Sarasota, and when pressed, they produced 80,000 pages. I think that qualifies as being aggressive deception. If I could go back to your last question, one of the other members of the 9/11 Commission who has called for release is Tim Romer, who was a former member of Congress and ambassador to India.
Have you been in touch with the Obama administration, or are they with you, about the possibility of releasing these 28 pages?
I was called 2 days after the 60-minute segment on the 28 pages. And was told that the administration was in active review of the 28 pages and would make a decision, not necessarily what the decision would be, but that a decision would be made by the middle of June. Last week, with Congressman Lynch of Massachusetts and Walter Jones of North Carolina, the two co-sponsors of the resolution in Congress, calling for the release of the 28 pages. We met with General James Clapper, the Director of National Intelligence, and he indicated that he was going to finish his review that week. That would have been by Friday of last week. It had to go through a couple of hoops, but that he did not think the June date for decision was off base.
And final question to you, Senator Graham, before we have to say goodbye. Do you think there should be a reopening of the investigation into September 11th, even beyond these 28 pages? You mentioned the 80,000 that I'll be talking with Shane Harris about, but is it time to revisit and have yet another investigation about what happened on that day?
Yes. What we know about 9/11 is largely focused on a set of incidents that occurred in San Diego. And we know about those, frankly, because the staff of the Congressional Committee, which was made up of people who had been in the FBI as well as other intelligence agencies, determined that there was something suspicious in the records of the San Diego field office, went to San Diego, and before the records could be withdrawn and classified, they determined this. A series of incidents and relationships between a Saudi agent.
And Senator Graham, I'm so sorry to do this to you, only because we are out of time. I have to say goodbye to you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. Just said goodbye to former Florida Senator Bob Graham. He co-chaired the 2002 Joint Congressional Investigation into the September 11th attacks and has been calling for years for the release of these 28 pages from the report. And joining us now is Shane Harris. He's Senior Intelligence and National Security Correspondent for the Daily Beast and ASU Future of War Fellow at the New America Foundation. Wrote a couple of books, including At War, The Rise of the Military Internet Complex, and The Watchers, The Rise of America's Surveillance State. And Shane Harris, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me. Nice to be here.
Nice to have you with us. And I'm so sorry that I had to get rid of Senator Graham because he was right in the middle of describing several things to us. Let me just put a couple of questions to you before we start talking about these 80,000 pages that you've been writing about involving what happened in Sarasota, Florida. It looks like Senator Graham's rather lonely fight is a little less lonely these days.
Oh, I would say so. And I mean, he mentioned John Layman, who was a former Navy secretary and was a member of the 9/11 Commission, which, of course, was separate from the commission that Senator Graham chaired, who has come out publicly now and said that he does think that the 28 pages show links to not senior Saudi officials, but people lower down that have hard ties back to the government. So Senator Graham is not the only one who thinks that there's something to these 28 pages that the public ought to see.
Well, I put this to Senator Graham because he co-chaired the committee. I mean, I assume someone knows what's on those 28 pages, even if they've been locked in a vault somewhere.
Well, it's a funny thing. These are 28 technically classified pages, of which there aren't necessarily very many secrets left, as far as I can tell, that have come out over time. We generally know what's in there, and probably the most significant information that's in those pages that's been reported is alleged ties between two of the hijackers who were living in San Diego before the attacks and an individual who was also allegedly collecting a paycheck from the Saudi government. He wasn't an employee, but he was being paid by the Saudis, is what this apparently alleges. This individual is said to have found housing for these two men, to essentially have set them up in the United States. And what the 28 pages really go to, we think, is this alleged network of individuals who were on the ground helping at least some of the hijackers get settled in the United States, get apartments, get to flight schools, and kind of do all of the logistical work that they had to do to prepare for their attack on 9/11.
Well, I guess the question is whether there are ties then to higher-ups in the Saudi government or perhaps even the royal family. Shane, can we know that at this point?
I don't think we can know it for certain until, you know, we've seen these 28 pages and people have had a time to independently review them. You know, that said, you know, the 9/11 Commission, of course, we've talked about what their stated conclusion has been, that this does not show a link to the Saudi government as an entity or to senior officials. And Saudi officials, we should note, too, I mean, have been on record since 2003 wanting these 28 pages to be declassified so they can start to rebut them. And I can tell you that just in the past few weeks, as it's become clearer, these pages are probably going to be declassified. You know, Saudis and their emissaries in Washington are really making a push with reporters to start rebutting this now and to start putting together very detailed responses to this, saying, look, the U.S. government investigated this. The 9/11 Commission looked into it. There is nothing here.
A pre-buttal, right?
A pre-buttal, yes.
Well, it's interesting. So we have two, as I mentioned to Senator Graham, there are two administrations, the Bush administration, the Obama administration, that seems to want to keep this information secret. What explains, do you think, the Obama administration's position on this?
Well, it's interesting. I understand the Bush administration's position, given the closeness to the Saudi royal family. And President Bush made no secret of the fact that he thought that maintaining U.S.-Saudi relationships was of really paramount importance. I think if the Obama administration, clearly the president and the royal, the king are not as close as President Bush was.
Doesn't look that way.
Not at all. But at the working operational level, it is the case that the Saudi government has been a very consistent and helpful partner with the United States in counterterrorism operations in the Middle East. It is by far from a perfect relationship. But when you talk to people in the intelligence community and in the military, they will say, look, the Saudis are good partners. They're the only really reliable partner maybe we have in the region, maybe with the Jordanians as well, and of course the Israelis. But they're viewed as a very important player in this. And I think the Obama administration has probably looked at this and thought, what's to really be gained from putting it out there? That said, the president had been on record as wanting to release this. He's waited till the last year of his presidency to do it. But I think that the pressure has really mounted just in recent months. And Senator Graham alluded to the 60 Minutes interview that he did, which I think probably brought this issue to a lot of people's attention very suddenly. And the administration is clearly feeling that pressure. I think they want to do it. It's just been a question of, you know, when is the best time? And there's probably never been a great time.
Well, so when CIA Director Brennan says that the American public are going to misunderstand this information, is he speaking for the administration or is he speaking for himself?
I think he's probably speaking, frankly, for himself a little bit. I mean, I hesitate to try and put, you know, sure, to read too much into it. But, you know, Director Brennan was the station chief for the CIA in Riyadh earlier in his career. He, on a working level day to day, probably understands better than most people in government how important the U.S.-Saudi relationship is. I don't doubt that others in the administration and maybe even President Obama share his concerns that when this information comes out, it will sort of fan flames of speculation anew. But, you know, Director Brennan has relationships with the Saudis that he thinks are probably worth protecting. And, you know, when he comes out and advocates for keeping it secret, I think he's, you know, probably speaking for himself and, you know, probably is entitled to do so as well.
And that's Shane Harris. He's a senior intelligence and national security correspondent for The Daily Beast. And we've been talking about these 28 pages, I guess now infamous or maybe famous 28 pages that have not been released. And this was a report that came out more than a dozen years ago, a joint session or joint combination of House and Senate looking into the terror attacks of September 11th and these 28 pages that have not been released. A lot of pressure on the Obama administration to release them. And again, that's what we're talking about in this hour of Radio Times with Shane Harris. 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Senator Graham talked a little bit about this Tampa office, and I wonder if we could get a little bit more into the details of these, 80,000 additional pages that were found from this FBI investigation into a Saudi family in Florida. What can you tell us, Shane?
Right. So the 80,000 pages are actually the total number of pages that the Tampa field office and the FBI has about the 9/11 investigation. Some set of it has to do with this family. Others have to do with – there were hijackers in the Florida area taking aviation lessons at a school in Venice, which is within the jurisdiction of the office. Mm-hmm. The key mystery here, though, is there was a family living in a gated community in Sarasota, Florida, that about a week before the attacks very suddenly left the house. Car still in the driveway. There was food left out on the countertops. There were toys floating in the pool. I mean, it was this kind of eerie scene when investigators ultimately went there, tipped off by neighbors who had some suspicions about this family that was sort of aloof. They kind of kept to themselves. And after 9/11, you can imagine that the neighbors got very concerned about this. When the FBI looked into this initially, and we know this from some documents that have been released publicly, there was an FBI investigation that found a significant set of relationships between this family and at least three of the 9/11 hijackers. Subsequent to that, what the FBI says is that they went back, looked at this again, and found that there was nothing to this, that the agent in question had written bad reports. He wasn't really practicing good investigative techniques, and they sort of threw water on their own investigation. You fast forward about 10 years after the 9/11 attacks, and a group of investigative journalists found out about this Saudi family and sued to get information from the FBI about what they knew of the investigation and what they ultimately determined. This eventually led to this 80,000 pages of documents being turned over to a judge in Florida who for the past 2 years has been going through them, presumably page by page, trying to find the ones that relate to this investigation of the Saudi family and see what can be released. And this is the suspicion here, and based on the initial FBI findings, is that these people may have played sort of analogous to the folks in California, allegedly played some role in helping the hijackers get settled, maybe were facilitators. But somewhere in those 80,000 pages, we think there may be answers to those questions.
You mentioned the possibility of three hijackers. Does that include Mohammed Atta, considered the kind of mastermind of the attacks?
That's correct. There's been some investigative reporting on this down in Florida over the years, citing sources who claim that there are records of the gate in this gated community that show that Mohammed Atta drove into the community and visited the family at this house. So that's a pretty big red flag. And again, the FBI says nothing to it. But I think similar to the 28 pages, the people who want to see that information released are saying, well, if there's nothing to it, then put it out there and let people decide for themselves.
So the FBI, I mean, were they withholding these 80,000, as you say, secret files on the Saudis, or were they just didn't know what they had? Or do we not know the answer to that?
I'm not sure we quite know the answer to that. What's interesting is that these journalists who were suing for it, initially the FBI came back and, as Senator Graham said, you know, we don't have anything relevant to your request. They then were allowed to, you know, in court sort of broaden the request and change the search terms that they wanted the FBI to go look for. That then produced these 80,000 pages dealing with the Tampa field office's investigation, which is a little strange because you would imagine that the Tampa field office, of course, knew that it had these records about its investigation. It played a pretty big role in it. But the judge in this case has really been interested, it seems, in finding out what was known and what the FBI looked into. do. I think the reason it's taken 2 years to get it out is simply because there's just a mass of information, and the judge has decided that he wants to go through it in his chambers piece by piece to decide what should be released.
Who is this judge, and what gives him this authority?
His name is Judge Richard Zlock, and what gives him the authority is that William Zlock, the journalists filed a Freedom of Information Act request within his district. Uh-huh. And so he's a U.S. District Court judge, and if you go to court filing under the Freedom of Information Act, that judge actually has a pretty significant amount of leeway in the kinds of things that he can order the government to do.
It's what, about 12, 13 years since this joint congressional investigation? Of course, there's the 9/11 report and some other reports as well. Are we losing access to important information with so many years having gone by?
You know, it's hard to say because there are some things that we know that these pages say in both cases that, I mean, of course, have been investigated and have been run down. But there may be things in there that we don't know. I mean, I'm inclined to think that with respect to the 28 pages that we're probably not going to see any big new revelations mm-hmm. that we hadn't heard about. But yes, I mean, more than a decade of time has passed. And for people who want to go back and investigate this after the fact, journalists like myself, historians, that is going to complicate things.
Now, just to add another, I guess, sort of wrinkle into our conversation, but in Congress, there is a bill to allow people to sue the Saudi government. Can you flesh that out for us, Shane?
Right. So basically, this would change existing law such that victims of the 9/11 survivors, family members of the 9/11 victims could sue the Saudi government for damages. And what it changes is a law allowing this to happen when a foreign sovereign government is linked to an attack on U.S. soil. Currently under U.S. law, you can sue for terrorist attacks that occur outside the U.S. Mm-hmm. This would change this specifically to let the 9/11 family sue. This faces a lot of opposition in the administration and particularly in the intelligence community for reasons I was discussing earlier, where the military and the intelligence agencies will say the Saudis are good partners. It's not a perfect relationship, but we need to not antagonize that. If this bill passes, though, it will open the gates and give the families a clearer path to sue directly the Saudi government. It's unlikely they would ever recover damages from that. Mm. But there have been instances where families have sued the government of Iran and won considerable damages, which they've never really been able to claim. But that has been an important precedent in this question of whether to allow lawsuits against the Saudis.
And we should add that there's a law firm here in Philadelphia that is spearheading a lawsuit for a number of these families. Talking about something I saw Obama said he was asked about the U.S. relationship with Saudi Arabia. He said, I think this is a quote here, it's complicated. You agree?
Yeah, I think it's complicated. That reveals a lot about how he looks at it, too. George W. Bush would not have answered it that way. He would have been more emphatic in embracing the Saudis. I think President Obama has really made no secret about his mixed feelings, and very much for the reasons that Senator Graham was alluding to. I mean, he sees a country that, yes, is a partner for the U.S. in counterterrorism, but at the same time, within its borders, this is the breeding ground for so much of the fundamentalism that we're having to combat. So very different than President Bush and his approach. You know, that said, I mean, he is keeping the 28 pages secret, and I think ultimately would try and weigh in against a bill that allows lawsuits. So that gives you some sense of what he means when he says it's complicated.
Mm. All of this, of course, is very complicated and very tragic as well. I remember hearing shortly after the September 11th attack, Shane, that there were a number of Saudis that were able to leave the country. While most of the country was shut down, there were some Saudis who were able to get out of the country. Can you answer that or verify that for us?
There have been reports about that. I have not looked as deeply into them as I have the issues concerning the 28 pages and the 80,000 pages. But what this goes to is there, I think, are still a lot of lingering questions about what exactly happened in the days before and after 9/11 as concerns Saudis in the United States. And there isn't, and I don't mean to minimize this at all, but I don't know that the release of these pages ultimately is going to solve all those questions. And there is a sense in which there's going to kind of always be a grassy knoll knoll, right, around 9/11, that people will never be fully satisfied about that. But, I mean, yes, it's true there were some members, I believe, of the bin Laden family who were allowed to leave the United States. I think the Bureau has said that it might have been for their own safety. But all this is a part of, I think, of a mystery that will not be ultimately settled by the release of these pages, but could be significantly clarified. I think it would also give people in both governments, the Saudi and the American government, the chance to come out and fully talk about this on the record, which they cannot do in the case of the Americans because they're classified, in the case of the Saudis because many of them probably haven't read it yet.
A tweet from Anthony, he says, and we mentioned, I talked earlier with Senator Graham about the 9/11 Commission. He says, this is an Anthony tweet saying the 9/11 Commission was a lie to the American people. Do you want to weigh in on that, Shane? And I mean, this was an exhaustive investigation, but I think for a lot of people, very unsatisfying.
Yeah, and it was, I think, as soon as it came out, there were allegations that it was a whitewash and it didn't go deeply enough into it. Personally, as a journalist, I've found the 9/11 Commission's work to be invaluable. I mean, it's a tremendously long and documented and footnoted report. It did not answer every question. I think it was probably unreasonable to think that it would. I personally come down on the side that I think it is the definitive account of what happened. And I have to say that I'm very impressed for that reason by John Layman's comments publicly recently that he now thinks that Senator Graham is on to something with these 28 pages because the 9/11 Commission seemed to sort of shoot them, to knock them down. So I don't think we'll ever close the book entirely on this, and nor should we. There should always be lines of inquiry and new information might come along and we should remain open to that. But generally, I do not think that the 9/11 Commission was a whitewash. I think it was a pretty significant report.
We're almost having a break here. I'll just quote something that John Layman said. He said, I think there was an awful lot of participation by Saudi individuals in supporting the hijackers, and some of those people worked in the Saudi government. Our report should never have been read as an exoneration of Saudi Arabia. This is former Navy Secretary John Layman.
Yeah, that's essentially coming out and saying, don't take us as the last word. Yeah. And don't necessarily assume that because we didn't directly address something, therefore we've exonerated all possibly guilty parties. I just think that was a pretty extraordinary statement.
And that's Shane Harris, our guest in this hour of Radio Times, joining us from the NPR studios in Washington, D.C. He's a senior intelligence and national security correspondent for The Daily Beast. And we are talking about the attacks of September 11th and a call recently from a number of different parts of the country to release 28 pages that came from a congressional report about a possible link between low-level Saudi government officials and the September 11th terrorists. 1-888-477-9499, the number to call to join our conversation. And do stay with us much more after this short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen, talking with Shane Harrison. If you're just joining us, let me just do a quick recap here. The Obama administration is reviewing whether or not to release 28 pages from a congressional report on the possible link between the Saudi government or officials of the Saudi government and the September 11th terrorists. We spoke with former U.S. Senator Bob Graham earlier in the hour. He has repeatedly called for the release of these 28 pages, and some 9/11 Commission members have said they contain unvetted information that could do harm to U.S.-Saudi relations. And we're talking about these 28 pages and other pages that have yet to be released related to the September 11th terrorist attacks. And again, Shane Harris is a senior intelligence correspondent for The Daily Beast. He's been covering this story, and he's also written two books, At War, The Rise of the Military Internet Complex, and The Watchers, The Rise of America's Surveillance State. And we've got calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email to join the conversation, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Shane, we have some callers that do want to join us, but just a quick question here. Where are these 28 pages?
They're kept in a secure facility on Capitol Hill in a committee office, and members can go read them, is my understanding. I think it's somewhat difficult to do that, but they're kept in a room where classified government documents from Congress are routinely kept.
And how does something go from being classified? I assume this is classified information. How does that get declassified? Who does that?
Well, the president actually has the authority to do it himself. He can unilaterally declare something to be declassified, doesn't have to ask for permission to do it. There is also an interagency panel that is set up at the National Archives that can make recommendations on these things. It appears that what's happening now, from what we know from U.S. officials, is that the Office of the Director of National Intelligence is conducting a review, bringing kind of everyone to the table, saying, you know, let's get everyone's view on this. Ultimately, I think it's the president's call. He could do it today if he wanted, even without the advice of his intelligence advisors.
And how much is this playing out in the U.S. Congress? Is this the sort of hot topic of the day?
I mean, it is a hot topic, I think. I mean, there have been, you know, a number of members who want to see it out. There is certainly, I think, a sense that this was a joint inquiry of Congress. They conducted it. The 9/11 Commission, of course, was something that was an independent commission. But this was Congress's report. And I think that there are some people who resent the idea that these 28 pages out of the entire report were kept classified. And again, I think that there's so much of this over time has kind of leaked out that I really don't know that it's going to be a bombshell when it finally does come out publicly. I mean, Senator Graham used the word searing. I think that's a good word for it. We'll be probably surprised to see some of the frankness with which it's written and maybe some naming of names. I just don't know if there's anything in there that is going to radically transform our understanding up to now. Now, once you look into it, investigate it, you might come to some new understandings. But I don't know that it's really going to surprise that many people who followed it.
I mean, searing seems like a strong word to me.
I think it is a strong word. Yeah, I don't mean to underplay it. It's just I think, you know, I put it this way. If there are names that we'd never heard of or allegations of connections that that had never surfaced, that I would find surprising. But look, there's no doubt that particularly in a political season like we are in right now, you put this into the mix and it comes out there and it's going to be a huge story and people are going to react to it. So it'll from my perspective as a journalist, that will be very exciting when it is released. And I think it will be released.
And just so I want to make sure that I and our listeners understand, as it stands now, there is what consensus that there was some kind of Saudi support for the terrorists in the U.S.?
Well, that's according to those 28 pages. What it does, we're told, is it raises these questions. And it's sort of I think it's a combination of making, you know, allegations and a series of leads that they believe should have been followed up on. And I think Senator Graham has even characterized that in other discussions as saying these are things that we felt should have been followed up on. Now, the 9/11 Commission will say we did follow up on them and we didn't find anything to it to substantiate. Again, that's why John Layman's comments recently are so interesting. He was one of the 9/11 commissioners. But I think that it ultimately will not draw firm conclusions. I think it's more going to raise questions and point investigators in certain directions.
Let me get Tony from California to join us on Radio Times. Tony, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, thank you, Marty, for taking my call.
You're welcome. Thanks for your patience.
No, you're welcome. Thank you for mentioning my tweet. Now, I read the 571-page 9/11 Commission report numerous times. And my favorite line from it is, to date, the U.S. government has not been able to determine the origin of money used for the 9/11 attacks. Ultimately, the question is of little practical significance, which I believe is a joke. For the 3,000 families that lost their family members, the 400 questions they submitted to the 9/11 Commission report, they never got their questions answered, to the fact that, terrorism, which is unique, used by governments to manipulate public opinion in order to further an agenda. I mean, this was a lie to cover up people, to cover up the Saudis. I mean, Prince Bandar al-Sultan and his wife funded al-Qaeda operatives. I mean, these questions, what do detectives do? You follow the money. You know, the 9/11 Commission report only got $14 million to investigate this whole entire day that changed the world. I mean, this is huge. People need the families. It's all about the families at the end of the day, on top of all the crazy conspiracies. But these families are completely left in the dark. And the whole 9/11 Commission, from Philip Zelkow to the leader, which was Mr. Keane, who's the head of the CFR, I mean, it's just Council on Foreign Relations. I mean, yes, this needs to be investigated.
Okay, fair enough. I hear your passion. And he did, Shane, raise this question of the families, which, of course, Senator Graham raised as well, which is that I guess a certain kind of justice for families is at least the knowledge, the complete knowledge of what happened on that day or how that day happened.
Yeah, exactly. And to the extent that there are unanswered questions, particularly about possible sources of funding and support in the United States, it's completely understandable why the families would demand full accounting for that. And to the point of these lawsuits that might be allowed to go forward, I mean, should the these families successfully file suit against the Saudi government, and should the Saudi government show up to defend itself, you would have a new form of public inquiry into that. So from their perspective, they want more answers, not less. And I think that many of the families do not feel like there has been sufficient accountability in a public airing of all the facts.
Well, as Tony says, and do you agree with this, follow the money. I mean, if you follow the money trail, you're going to get maybe not the smoking gun that people might be looking for, but you're going to get a lot of information.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the money trail is hugely important, and I think it's I think the 9/11 Commission did investigate aspects of this. I don't think it's quite accurate to say that they didn't touch any of that or thought it wasn't important. But they also focused on things like intelligence sharing breakdowns, lack of communication between the FBI right. and the CIA. There was a real systemic failure here. But what I think, going to these 28 pages, this is getting exactly at the kind of issues that the caller is talking about. If you're talking about people on the ground providing support, potentially providing money, these are the connections that you then trace back to really understand how, at a very precise level, the 9/11 hijackers were able to operate in the United States for as long as they were without being detected.
I mean, we heard from Tony's call, and I see comments here as well. People are very – I have here the 9/11 Commission report that I also read. People are very suspicious, Shane, about the people that made up this committee and the people that helped them out and their final report. As you said, you feel like there's good information in here, maybe not complete information, but it shouldn't be dismissed out of hand.
No, and I don't think that there was a conspiracy among the 9/11 commissioners to actively suppress or distort a narrative. There may have been, there certainly were certain biases that they brought to bear on this, but I think that I don't agree with the notion that this is a story that was concocted when the 9/11 commissioners knew that there was a real story someplace else that they just didn't want to tell.
Let me get Tom from Chester Springs to join us on Radio Times. Tom, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes.
Hi there.
Hi. Great. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
So my question is that I've heard and read in reliable sources that bin Laden purposely chose hijackers of Saudi Arabian descent and nationality in order to, damage and destabilize relations between the U.S. and Saudi Arabia. If that's true, we don't want to, fan the flames. We don't want to play into bin Laden's hands by essentially creating this kind of a link. And maybe we should try to tamp it down. But I'd just like to hear what you have to say.
No, it's an interesting point of view. Shane, what do you think?
Yeah, I've seen those reports as well that bin Laden wanted to have Saudis specifically in order to, and he had declared war on the Saudi royal family before he declared war on the United States. I think within the government, particularly in the national security community, there is a sense that this is a very important relationship between the U.S. and Saudi Arabia that needs to not be inflamed and not be upset. I think it's possible that those kinds of biases do creep in and sort of push you towards, tamp it down, maybe keep it secret. But in something like this, though, it's as big as the 9/11 attacks. I mean, I have to admit, though, it's been very difficult to completely silence all of this talk about connections between Saudis in the United States and elsewhere. I mean, this is not something that has been, even though those 28 pages are secret, it's not as if this is not an explored kind of area. But generally, yes, I think in the national security community, there is a tendency to want to, to not upset the apple cart, if you will.
The focus has been largely so far on San Diego. We were talking about Florida, I guess Tampa, Florida, or Sarasota, Florida. Are there other parts of the country, you think, where there might be similar information about some kind of association or support for the terror attacks?
I think it's possible. I mean, there were activity, I think, in the suburban Washington area, obviously. Those seem to be the nexuses, though. What was interesting to me was one of the joint commissioners who worked with Senator Graham had talked publicly about Los Angeles and San Diego from his perspective being, I think he used the word, the hornet's nest.
Yeah.
And it seems like that is kind of where the nexus of this really was from the perspective of those congressional investigators.
You mentioned the 80,000 pages and this Florida judge that's going through it page by page. It's been about 2 years. Is there any sense of when, where he is in this process, or when these his decision will be made public? It seems like everything's kind of coming together at the same time, but maybe not.
It does, yeah. There's no sense from talking to the lawyers, I interviewed them, of when he might be ready, and he's given no indication that he's in any particular rush. But what the people who are suing for the information are hoping is that the pressure now on to release the 28 pages will persuade the judge, if he needed any more persuading, that this is a topic that the American people want to know about and that the administration thinks they ought to know about if they're declassifying it. So there's a hope that, as it was one person who's involved in the lawsuit said, I have no reason to believe that the judge is slow rolling this, but I really hope he hurries up.
Indeed. Let me get actually a comment from Jesse who says, I think the 28 pages should be declassified. We need to air this publicly and have some transparency in this relationship. Also, has there ever been any tie between the USS Cole attack and September 11th? Has there been, Jane?
Well, insofar as this was an attack order by al-Qaeda, I think, yes, definitely. These were the Cole attack was very much orchestrated to send a message to the U.S. military, which al-Qaeda saw as an occupying, you know, foreign presence in the region. So you have the same organization ordering that attack. And you can go back to the attacks in Kenya and Tanzania in the late 1990s on our embassies. These are things that people, frankly, look at who study these things and say these were the warning signs that many in the intelligence community, I think, failed to heed.
And what is al-Qaeda today? Do you know, or does anyone know?
Yeah, we do. I mean, it's of course, Osama bin Laden, we know, is dead. Yep. His deputy, Ayman al-Zawahiri, is the one who is in charge. They're believed to be operating out of Pakistan. What's interesting is that they have sort of been eclipsed now by ISIS, which, of course, is a breakaway from al-Qaeda. ISIS wants to establish a caliphate in Iraq and Syria, a sort of a homeland, if you will. Al-Qaeda historically has said, no, we need to, you know, launch attacks, sort of proceed very cautiously with this. Notably, last week, al-Qaeda came out and said now it actually wants to form an emirate in Syria and Iraq, which is sort of a step towards creating a caliphate. So there's a real sense that al-Qaeda as an organization, which has been dramatically weakened, I think, by U.S. counterterrorism operations, now feels like it has to fight in the jihadi community for credibility against ISIS, which is just drawing so much more attention and so many more fighters and financing.
And can we say today that ISIS grew out of the U.S. invasion of Iraq?
Oh, I think definitely. you know, al-Qaeda, ISIS's predecessor was a group called al-Qaeda in Iraq, which was set up following the U.S. occupation by a very ambitious young jihadi named Zarqawi, who had been sort of dismissed by the al-Qaeda leadership in Afghanistan as a bit of a hothead and somebody who wasn't really serious. He kind of fanned the flames of the insurgency and tried to stoke a civil war in Iraq when we were there. Ultimately, our troops, of course, left in 2011. We had defeated al-Qaeda in Iraq at the time, but those pieces are what came together just two or three years later to form ISIS. So it is very much a reaction to the U.S. invasion of Iraq.
A question from Eric. Can Shane talk about reports of insider trading, i.e. airline and defense industries, before the September 11th attacks? And I certainly remember talking about that shortly after those attacks.
Yeah, this came out shortly after. You're right. I mean, there were reports of short sells of airline stocks. I believe the 9/11 Commission did look into that and found nothing to it. I can say I have never looked directly into it, but I'm very skeptical that there was any kind of insider information about that, and I haven't seen any reports substantiating that.
And how many investigations have there been of the September 11th attacks?
The two big ones are the 9/11 Commission and the Joint Committee report. Those are the two that were convened the soonest after the attacks. And then there have been any number of internal agency investigations into their own roles. But the Congressional report and the Joint 9/11 Committee, those are the two big ones.
Well, Shane Harris, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times and getting us up to speed on this, I think, really important story.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And Shane Harris is a senior intelligence and national security correspondent for The Daily Beast. He's the author of a couple of books, At War, The Rise of the Military Internet Complex, and The Watchers, The Rise of America's Surveillance State. And we began our conversation with former U.S. Senator Bob Graham, who was co-chair of the 2002 Joint Congressional Investigation into the September 11th attacks. And that's it for today's edition of Radio Times. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times, and you can find out much more about this program. You can download a podcast, find us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, Emily Bryant, John Ahrens, and Liz Fiedler. I'm Marty Moscoane. Thank you so much for joining us.